We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
We were arguing about.
You're not mad, are you?
We were arguing about. Yeah, I don't. I've never liked you, man.
Yeah, oh, whatever. Come on. 14 years. We should just put a therapist in here with us in the room. Just during
it's
the day.
A good idea.
Dan, you do your best, bud.
As I said the other day, I had a friend.
We'd be trying to get custody of you.
Never asked me about my work before. He said, "Can I ask you something about your job?" I said, "Sure." I said, "Are you and Andy friends?"
The best part.
Do you want to like each other?
Do you want to tell everybody what happened to us yesterday when we left? We walked out the door. Who stopped us to tell us about their car? Because everywhere I go, yeah. I got to hear about that damn van that's been gone for like 3 years.
Yeah.
How's Jeff's van? How did the van become so popular?
I don't know. Forget the van. I want to get back to our fight. We were talking about developing players and blah, 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 blah. And Andy thinks I'm doing something that I have no idea what he's even talking about.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm talking about getting guys up here, but being patient and bringing them up
and
when
I'm talking
ready.
About opportunity when guys aren't guys performing, so giving someone else a chance.
Well, which I want to do, but maybe there's a reason why. I mean, I wanted DeLauder up here yesterday, but they must not think he's ready.
I want
Cephas up here yesterday.
I wanted Cephas to go from East Lake to Cleveland. So
Anthony's in Cleveland Heights. Hello, Anthony.
Heights, hi.
You know, Heights, hi. Yes. Okay. So, I agree with Keith here. It's when folks are, you have to take into account, I think, when folks who are singing, bring up DeLauder, bring up Cephas, they're doing it subsequent to them saying we stink, we've lost 10 games in a row. The implication here is that these guys are going to help this year, which is not correct. As Jeff, you're pointing out, it's quite likely, and as Keith pointed out, that they're just not ready. And the front office has said last year and this year the players are going to help us get to the playoffs, if that's in the cards at this point, are on the roster right now. So I have an issue when people are expecting guys like DeLauder to be ready now. Now, if you are truly a
Guardian, if DeLauder wasn't hurt, I agree with what Keith said, that he should be ready right now. But you have to, fair? I mean, look, if you're sitting here from the outside, you're saying this is Major League Baseball, and I know there's a jump between AAA and the bigs, but yes, if you brought either one of these guys up and they hit 200, then they would be more successful than the guys that are hitting right now.
He's had 500 at-bats in his minor league career. That's it.
Yeah, I think maybe the issue is...
Are you talking about Cephas or talking about DeLauder?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you truly are someone who's saying bring them up, let's see what they got, and we're getting ready for next year, that's fine. But my fear is that you're going to bring them up, and maybe this is just my response as a Guardians fan first to people who are demanding they bring them up. That the minute they go 0-10, they're going to go, they stink, the front office stinks, get rid of Dolan, and they're not going to give them the time to.
Guess what? They're going to do that anyway.
Well, you're right,
they've been doing
that
since day one, Anthony. But
you're right about that. One other thing I want to point out here. Well, two other things. You had a caller previous to Keith Law coming on, comparing GMs across eras for the Guardians.
That was Bill
and Parma. I'd be a little careful to do that because the finances of baseball have changed so significantly that it's practically a different game, especially at the level of, what players are, the financial level. So that's just one thing I'd be careful about doing. The Dodgers are so far ahead of everybody in terms of budget at this point that I'd be careful about making those comparisons. It's like comparing to the dead ball era and home runs or something like that. And then one other thing I'm going to point out, I just want to, on Slay Ciccone, the guy's making $765,000 a year. So anybody who wants to at some point this year, when it's going to happen, complain about trading away Josh Naylor, he's under club control at $765,000, and Josh Naylor was set to make $20 million. So just bear in mind.
So pay the man. That's what I say. Pay the man now. Get Slade Ciccone some cash now.
Yes, sir.
You don't have to.
I'm saying do the right thing. Anthony, thank you, buddy. Do the right thing. Sign him up now, long term. Get him go. I love this kid.
Evan is in Lindhurst. Hello, Evan.
Brush Hardy.
Hey, guys. Hey. I just wanted to call. When you were arguing, Jeff, about AAA, you were kind of making a logical fallacy. You were arguing that, one, AAA doesn't help you. Because like
no, know, I never, I never said that, Evan.
Go to 180,
Evan. I never said that.
You mentioned Jonathan Rodriguez, AAA Player of the Year, and then all of a sudden he can't hit when he's up here.
Well, he hasn't yet.
Hasn't yet, and I think he could use some time up here to at least play a little bit.
Couldn't agree with you more.
Can or can't hit.
Couldn't agree with you more.
I don't know if it would help Delauder to really play around there. He was at James Madison, I think, for a few years.
That's correct. That's where he went to college.
Orleans.
Is that like low A? I mean, toss in 500 bats for that, and then he's ready to come up. I mean, I would trade away. I love Santana, but like Milwaukee needs a first baseman right now. There you go.
Boston.
Lane Thomas. He's a free agent to be. He's screwed himself this year, but let him go try to get some money back from playing in the playoffs somewhere.
You know what, though, Evan, the problem with that, though, and I'm with you on that because he's a free agent, either they want to keep him, which they haven't shown, but he's been injured and he's not performed well. Man, if you trade him, you're going to get nothing for him. And so I wonder, do you just try and get him here and he comes back and he plays well and then you try and sign him next year on a better contract?
I mean, you could sign him anyway if he's a free agent. I mean, you get player to be named later. That was Michael Brantley 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. But like Aroldis Chapman, he went to the Cubs on a World Series, went right back to the Yankees.
Yeah, and that's a valid point, Evan. That's a valid point. I just don't think I don't think a team's going to give you anything for Lane Thomas right now. Anything. Because he's hurt, and he's been hurt a couple of times this year. Unless he can get on the field and stay healthy, I think it'd be really tough to trade him and based on, you know, he can help us down the stretch. Yes, he could if he's healthy. But are you going to give up anything of any kind of substance, Andy, for a guy who hasn't been on the field much this year? That's the problem. And that's a shame. Lane seems like a good guy, and he did some nice things here last year.
Yeah, I keep going back to Chase DeLauder and just kind of looking at his numbers. I just... Even if he got here, I guarantee he'd hit more. You got to believe he'd hit better than 200, 210, 215 if he got here, even if he's trying to work his way through it right now.
You know what it goes back to?
I'm just looking at all of his numbers since he was 19 years old, even a Cape Cod Summer League number, and you know what he did at Akron or Lake County. You know, I just Arizona.
That's all well and good, and it can't be dismissed. The problem, I still think it goes back to this. And they've got a lot of guys that they haven't made decisions on. You know, John Kenzie. Yeah, we loved him at times. Rodriguez. I think he's so intriguing, it's ridiculous. He's put up big numbers in AAA.
Yeah, Rocchio, I think Rocchio is one of those guys, too.
Well, Rocchio might be, too. And then Gabe Arias was getting a chance. You know, you've got to make decisions there. I just think there's so many guys in the same boat. You know, and they have to figure out, all right, is this guy a keeper? Is that guy a keeper? And they, I don't know that you could have a big miss there, but boy, that would be terrible if they did, wouldn't it? You know, let's just say you decide Rodriguez isn't the guy and he goes to some other team and becomes, you know, Anthony Santander, who was really good in Baltimore after going to the Rule 5 draft. Who knows? No.
Ding, 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 ding. I'm a Jeff in a box. Bing, bing, bing.
Oh, you're a miserable human being, Menigan.
Ding, 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 ding. I'm a Jeff in a box. Bing, bing, bing.
I don't even know what that means.
It means that once you label a player, they stick in that box.
I disagree with that thought completely.
Oh, Jeff, you label guys all the time. Come on. It's okay. It's all right.
For the sake of a 4-hour talk show, so that we can have something to discuss. But I don't
stick
them there.
It's the same thing as
give a guy a chance to develop. That must be the case. You call me the king of the process. If I'm the king of the process, how do I put a guy in a box and not let him out?
You're getting very emotional about this, Jeff.
Yes, I am.
Talk about it. You don't.
Because you're a horse's patoot.
Well, just because you can't stand that, I'm telling you that I am going to chart every throw Will Howard has moving forward, and it pains me because I don't want the Steelers to win.
I've not said anything about Will Howard except for the fact that he went in the sixth round. Doesn't mean he can't be successful.
That is a fallacy. But you ripped the you-know-what out of me because I think Will Howard's a good quarterback. Two of you two together crush me on Will Howard every day. If you could, if I could walk in the door, you would say, Will Howard, and then you'd start ripping me left and right, and then the two of you would be laughing in my face. I cannot wait for my vengeance on that. Man, I want Will Howard to play well, but I don't want him to do it for the Steelers. That sucks.
I mean, it is one of the finer Jeff things, is of course.
Oh, Will.
Thank you. Thank you.
I got to give him props till the end because that is really funny.
Thanks.
Oh, Will Howard.
Why does he have to be with the Steelers? Will. Why couldn't he be with any other team in the NFL? Any other team, so I could kind of root for him a little bit. I want him to be. I want him to have the greatest numbers.
How did we end up on football?
Any quarterback in the history of the game that loses.
How did we end up on football?
That the Steelers defense fails them all the time. And people are like, man, I feel so bad for Will Howard.
Now we're talking about Andy's man crush and his hate of the Steelers.
See, now I knew he'd turn it. No, you said to me that you don't do that to me, but you do that to me. So now you have the reality of it.
Brandon is in Paintsville. Hi, Brandon.
Brandon, what's up?
Baskin and Phelps, how y'all doing?
What's up?
We're miserable.
Hey. Shout out Paintsville. Let's hear it up for Paintsville.
Not miserable. Paintsville, amen. Yeah. Look, I know you guys are talking about prospects and all, but hey, I am super excited. Hey, slumps happen in baseball. We swept the Houston Astros, baby.
That's right.
We swept them.
The first place Houston Astros, Brandon.
Who were playing great baseball before? Who were playing great baseball before we got to them?
Doing awesome. I'm excited. Hey, that took away the 10-game losing streak.
Oh yeah,
Houston Astros.
Three wins in the last 13 games, baby. Here we go.
Houston Astros.
Wrong team.
That was close though, wasn't it?
Brandon, thank you. Appreciate that.
Houston Astros number one. Dan Pastorini on the hill. It was great. Earl Campbell behind the plate. What?
I did like the Oilers back in the day. And I'm a bum Phillips fan.
I just think about the Browns playing on that godforsaken carpeting they had in the Astrodome.
Jeff Shadell covers.
Seriously, I think we had the same carpeting when I lived in Cleveland Heights. Same stuff. It was.
You know why that was so bad? One of the reasons?
Because they didn't buy it from your dad. That's why.
That's a great point, but no. They did not have concrete underneath it.
What was underneath it?
Dirt.
It was dirt?
It was rolled out over dirt.
And that's why it was so bad?
It was quite bumpy.
I did not know that. I thought it was concrete.
When I was down there, it was dirt.
Hmm. And then they could just lift it and they could bring out big trucks.
Bring out a horse and have a rodeo.
Yeah, that's true.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall. Did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
A man who's definitely a good husband and a man who's definitely a good Guardians observer, ladies and gentlemen, Justin Latta. He joins us from the Locked On Guardians podcast. It's every single day, and he had 10 days he was hating things, but they got it going here over the last couple of days. And I want to know whether or not it's a front office problem or it's an ownership problem with the Guardians, or if that's a real problem whatsoever, or are we just pretty upset because they had a 10-game losing streak? Justin joins us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Justin, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Yeah, my neighbor has only ever heard me scream about the Guardians, not fights with my wife, so I can tell you that.
One day I will tell you guys, it has to be off air, of the crazy things my neighbor was saying, and we wanted to call the cops because we thought it was we thought it might be a DV situation, and it ended up he was playing video games. And we knocked on the door and he's like, "Hello, can I help you?" And I'm like, "Is everything okay over there?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'm playing video games." And he was playing video games. It was weird. My roommate and I, we were thrown off by it. We used to just sit down and watch the Indians back in the day. And now we sit here and we get mad about the Guardians today. And Justin, let me ask you, do you think that it's a problem at all? Or do you think that we have to divvy it up between the front office and the ownership, considering Guardians' problems?
I mean, when you go through a 10-game losing streak, I think everybody's at fault, right? Especially when you're coming off a team that went to the ALCS a year ago and you have these kind of struggles.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things. It's not an overnight problem. It's one of those things that bubbles up over the last couple of years, and it has to do a lot with draft cycles and player development cycles and not keeping the right guys and injuries. So, and you have a second-year manager who everybody, you know, needs to realize that managing is one of those things, too, where there's development is not linear.
Yeah, Justin, when things start going south, I understand the fans' reaction. We've talked about it endlessly, what the Guardians could have done this offseason, and it seems like every move they made was the wrong move. But which one to you were you speaking out about at the time while it was going on?
I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, they didn't add anything offensively. They only subtracted. I wanted to believe that Carlos Santana and Josh Naylor was going to be sort of a one-to-one production-wise. And, you know, Naylor was having a pretty solid year. Santana's, you know, had some ups and downs this year. He certainly is not the guy he was, you know, 10 years ago. He's certainly not the guy he was 6 years ago when he was an all-star here. I think that's the toughest one to look at is you didn't really compliment anything. Like, you were hoping that David Fry came back this year off Tommy John and was going to be the same player he was the first couple months when he was an all-star. So there was just no real fail-safe where if things didn't work out, you had no one to turn to, and you wanted to turn to maybe, you know, Juan Brito, who's been hurt, or Chase DeLauder, who isn't up yet, which I'm sure we definitely won't scream about at all. There was just no fail-safe, and then those guys got hurt, and there was no option, and there was no depth to turn to when things got bad, and that's why you see, you know, Jonathan Rodriguez and Will Wilson, guys that really probably aren't major leaguers long-term for a team that believes they're contending for a playoff spot.
I mean, I just got caught in my feelings on Sunday, Justin, when I'm seeing that lineup, and then I, you know, you find out about everything, and then Chase DeLauder is not up here. I don't think they make decisions out of spite, but why are they waiting so long to bring guys up? Because we've heard a bunch of conspiracy theories. I'm like, well, Justin knows the minors as well as anybody here. So what is the reason for them not calling guys up yet?
They can't get out of their apartment lease in Columbus. I don't know. Like, I don't really have a great answer to that right now. Maybe that's the only thing for it, or maybe there's something other down there that, you know, they need to get excited about besides Dime a Dog Night. I don't know. The Chase DeLauder thing, like, the only thing I can really, really sink my teeth into is you don't want to sit him for a couple of days. You want to hamstring your roster. Like, if he needs to have that whole volume build-up thing, you can't have him and David Fry in the roster because David Fry can't play against righties and he can't play the field, so he's a very limited player. And if you want Chase DeLauder to get a day off every four games or every five games, you kind of have two players there that don't really fit. And then you also have Kyle Manzardo, who can only play first base. I know he's not with the team right now, but like, you have a very unclear roster construction right now where he doesn't quite fit. But, you know, Jonathan Rodriguez is up right now and he barely plays. And when he does, it doesn't make any sense anyway. You want to try to make everything perfect, right? You don't want Chase DeLauder to face lefties. You don't want him to play 5 days in a row. You don't want him to face Hunter Brown or Tarik Skubal. But, like, you can try to control all those factors you want, but at some point, the guy's got to get used to the major leagues, and I think you should do that at some point. So I don't really have a good answer other than just it's an unperfect roster fit, and they're not willing to make a move that makes the roster even more unperfect.
How Justin Latta joining us from the Locked On Guardians podcast. Find him on Twitter at JL_baseball. How successful do you think Chase DeLauder will be when he finally gets up here?
I mean, every rookie struggles. I mean, I it's been a couple weeks since I've looked this up, but the last time I checked, he faced like under 12 fastballs in the minors that were over 94 miles an hour. And, you know, in the major leagues now, if you throw a 94, that's average. So he's going to face that. He's going to face sliders he's never faced before. He's going to face changeups he's never faced before. But you have to find out. Like, you have to see him struggle against these things. Outside of injuries, this guy has not really faced a ton of baseball adversity, like, on the field. Like, he succeeded at every level. And I really like the underlying data at AAA. He doesn't chase out of the zone. He makes a lot of contact in the zone. He hits the ball hard. Hits the ball in the air. You know, he does a lot of things really well that I think are going to set him up for success at the major league level. He's going to struggle. Like, major league pitching is really good. AAA pitching is really not good. So he's going to have to make those adjustments. He's definitely going to go through that adjustment period. But wouldn't you want to make that adjustment like now? And even if the season is a lost cause, he can be prepared to overcome those things for 2026 and you can maybe get back on the right track. I mean, I think he's ready for it. I just, you know, he's going to have to go through that adjustment period at some point.
When it comes to Travis Bezanna, you know, Keith Law was the first one to write about him a while ago. And I'm like, man, it's early. He just got hurt with the oblique. But Mike Exesa, he just wrote from CBS Sports, like if he was going to do a redraft, the Guardians would have taken that pitcher that the Reds just took, which I can't remember overall. You would know right off the top of your head. I'm drawing a brain fart here, Justin. Are people outside of the organization, outside of the fan base, being too hard on Travis Bezanna?
Yeah, absolutely. Chase Burns was the guy that went
Chase
to the
Reds. Chase Burns, damn it. Thank you.
He had a great first start, and then he got one out in his second start against the Red Sox. Like, he's still development in progress, too, and he doesn't have a third pitch. People think he could be a reliever. I think he's a really good pitcher. But, no, you can't do redraft starting a year later. It hasn't even been a full year. I mean, the draft is next week. You can't do a redraft a year later. I mean, yes, there are certain guys who are making their major league debut a lot sooner than they used to in the past, and obviously Bezanna's on the IL, and he hasn't, but no, I mean, he was definitely going through some things at AAA. He was, you know, caught between some swing decisions. He was struggling against left-handers. But, you know, even amid those struggles, his numbers were still solid. Are they what you maybe thought they would be out of college? Maybe not, but he was still doing pretty well. And he would easily be in AAA, I think, right now if he was healthy and he's finally rehabbing. But, yeah, it's way too early on those things. And I still think the set of tools there and the work ethic and all those things that go into that, I still think he's the right pick a year later.
All right, Justin Latto with us right now on the hotline. We've got the trade deadline coming up at the end of the month. So everybody has pointed to Carlos Santana potentially getting traded. Not sure what the market is going to be. What could you see right now the Guardians doing at the deadline?
It's going to be tough because there's just not going to be that many sellers, right? Because of all these extra wild card spots in baseball now. Everyone's kind of just sitting in the middle and nobody knows what they're going to do until like the last 48 hours. So maybe things will heat up the last 48 hours, but I feel like last year, the trade market was pretty bleak. I mean, getting Alex Cobb was like the most exciting thing besides Lane Thomas and look how that worked out. He hasn't even pitched this year either. I think they probably do a soft sell at this point. You know, Santana, I think the Mariners will have interest. Paul Sewald could be a guy teams are interested in because he's a veteran in the postseason. And if he pitches well over the next couple of weeks, I think teams will be interested in him. I don't know if they'll find any suitors for Jake Junis. Maybe someone needs a depth arm. Outside of that, I don't know. I don't think there's a whole lot to sell. I know people want to jump on trading Clase or trading Kwan. The market, I don't think, is really going to be there for those guys at this time of season. And it doesn't make any sense for them. Do they feel like they're contenders next year? Maybe. I think the Class A thing, if you really want to explore that, is an off-season conversation, not a July conversation. Because look at the past. Like, you guys remember the Andrew Miller trade when Cleveland got Andrew Miller?
Of course.
Look what the Yankees got for him. Like, I was flaming mad at the time over trading Clint Frazier. I was wrong about that. The Yankees got nothing out of that trade. Like, you can trade those guys all you want right now, but the reality is trading a closer as cheap as Class A is, your return is not going to be a player that helps you in 2026. So I just don't think that there's a market for that that makes sense for them right now, unless somebody really overpays, which we just haven't seen over the last couple of years.
Final one from me. I'm not even going to ask you about Steven Kwan because I don't think it's a conversation piece, right? I can move on?
No, okay. I don't think it makes sense right now either.
Absolutely. Okay. Tyler Naquin, 34 years old. He's back at Lake County now as a pitcher. He's throwing mid-90s, did well at the Arizona Complex League. Will we see him at all with the Guardians at any time? I'm not even just talking about this year or in the bigs again.
Yeah, that's hard to say. Pitching's really hard, too. Hitting's hard. Pitching's just as hard. The guy hasn't done it since he was in, what, high school, and he's finally doing it. Facing teenagers in Arizona, facing 20-year-olds, 22-year-olds in high A, is way different. So I don't know. I mean, the guy's 35. I hope he can do it.
You're gonna
love to see a guy back making that journey and who's almost as old as I am. But I think it's one of those stories that would be a great movie. But I don't know if it's going to be a good ending.
You're gonna go watch him, aren't you?
Oh, I'll be there next week. Absolutely.
Folks, follow him on Twitter, on social media, @JL_baseball. He's the host of Locked On Guardians, Justin Latta. Justin, thank you very much for the time, bud.
Always enjoy talking to you guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Justin Ladd on that North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Yeah, they called him up to Lake County yesterday, which I think he gave up, what, one hit and one run in eight innings, eight appearances in the complex league, which I know you're playing against teenagers and things like that, but that's, I don't know, he's 34. I think it's kind of fun.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall! Did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
Cardinals get the third win last night. They sweep the Astros. And all of a sudden, I mean, if you can sweep the Astros, you can play, I mean, considerably worse than you did the last three games and rattle off a sweep or take three or four from this White Sox team.
Well, the White Sox just aren't very good, too. I think the hard part about it, though, is, I mean, Jose was just awesome in this series.
Yeah.
So it's like, are we going to just rely on Jose Ramirez having a million home runs and being basically a juiced up version of Jose for the entire stretch? Like, yeah, no kidding. Obviously, we finally have some good things go right when Jose's that awesome. But it was amazing how much of an offensive output he had.
Yeah, but I mean, Rocchio had a couple moments. Angel had a couple moments.
Two home runs.
No, Nolan Jones had a couple moments. Kwan actually had a couple good games. I don't know why I said actually. He's an elite contact hitter. I don't think it was just Jose. I mean, yes, Jose, great. That helped you.
I mean, but even a game like yesterday, for instance, though, he had the third home run of the series, right, back in the first inning. He then made two awesome plays at third base defensively and set everything up. And then he singled and he got the double and the steal and everything to start off the two-run rally in the seventh. Like, there was so much about Jose and his impact on not only this game, I thought Monday as well, that you're just sitting there and you're like, this is, yes, you win games when Jose Ramirez is this awesome. And yeah, there are other outputs. It's not just Jose Ramirez versus the Astros, but he was just another level over these three games. And when he's that way, like, yeah, you become a really hard team to beat.
I mean, if you can do that against Hunter Brown and a decent Astros staff, I think against the fellas in Chicago, I think, I actually think that's a really good sign. And it even makes me like the fact that Jose's not going to the All-Star game or not playing in it. I like it even more because he's getting healthy, and that's why I think you saw what you did against the Astros. Continue that four more games and then take it easier on your body for the All-Star break. Hit the ground running in the second half, and I think that's one of the big variables that all of a sudden maybe start to piece together a good second half run.
Yeah, I mean, this will be clutch, and I think what it's also a reminder too, and I don't know if they're going to end up doing, you know, a four game sweep of the White Sox or anything like that, and you enter the All-Star break on a 7-game winning streak. And obviously a 10-game losing streak is such an extreme. But you see what's happening in Los Angeles right now?
Mm-hmm.
They're on a 6-game losing streak. Like losing streaks do happen to really good teams. And I'm not suggesting that this Guardians team is a really good team. I'm far from that. But I do think it's very interesting that I think at times, and I was even guilty of this just because you get caught up in the moment, but I think we went very, very overboard with the 10-game losing streak. And you just had to take a step back and be like, okay, losing streaks do happen. Same way winning streaks do happen. It's a thing in baseball.
The only thing I would push back on is it's the Dodgers losing streak and the Guardians. I'm not even talking about from a per game basis. I just mean in terms of, like, if you're panicking about the Dodgers, you are honestly dumb. There's no reason to. You don't have to like a 6-game losing streak, but there's just no reason. They have so much talent, and even if somebody big went down, they'll just replace them on a trade market because they've got one of the three best farm systems in baseball with the Guardians. The reason why I actually think the panic over those 10 games, because you know me, I'm Mr. It All Comes Out Even in the Wash. I am Mr. Baseball's 162 games. I hate when it stifles the conversations we have, but I do see the value in that a lot. The problem is everybody had been saying for 3 months, hey, this isn't sustainable. There's a lot of luck in what you're doing. You don't have a great schedule, this, that, and the other. And so there was already a natural skepticism about the limited success, the plus 500, you know, with four games above 500 success they had up until June 1st, that the 10-game losing streak was more likely who you are, or, well, sorry, validated those concerns, not necessarily who you are.
I just think it gave us a chance to complain about the front office in a meaningful way, and that's really the conversation I was seeking out. Because even if you won 10 games or lost 10 games, it doesn't excuse the fact that Kafis, DeLauder, and Brito should be up and playing baseball at the big league level. I just think the 10-game losing streak almost was just a way to light up the fire of the conversation.
Now, it is going to be really interesting to see if they take 3 of 4 or if they just completely sweep the Sox going into the break. They'll be just 3 games out from being 500, and they're likely going to be, I think right now they're 4.5 games out of the last wild card spot. You're going to be within shouting distance of that, which makes the fact that the Guardians in a seller's market could do very well for themselves in their very near-term future here. With putting guys like Emmanuel Clase out there or even Stephen Kwan, they've been one of the hot contenders this last week of teams or analysts talking about them trading.
Yeah.
You're going to run us through some deals that Jeff Passan had for the Guardians.
Jeff Passan came up. It was like 7 or 8 different teams that he wanted to send our players to, because let's be honest, the Guardians are that team right now. They're the talked about selling team around the big leagues. And I wanted to send you 3 of them involving 3 different players. And I wanted to ask you which one gets you the most irate. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to start with Cade Smith to the Tigers. Now, the Tigers need a swing and miss arm. That's kind of the idea where yesterday we talked about Clase to the Tigers,
yeah,
and whether or not you would trade within the division. We have not seen many trades within the division in a recent stretch here when it involves the Guardians and the Tigers. Cade Smith's not Emmanuel Clase. Cade Smith is not nearly the pitcher that Clase is, but I like Cade Smith an absolute ton, and I think it would satisfy a lot of what the Tigers are seeking out. Now, does this mean that Max Clark is on the table the way I want him? Probably not. McGonagall, is he on the table? Probably not, but it doesn't mean the Tigers' farm system is just completely depleted of talent either.
Yeah, I mean, they're honestly, their top 10's probably my favorite right now, if you look, because it's not just who are the prospects, it's also are they continuing to grow and are they continuing to perform? And they've got almost everybody in their top 10 right now on MLB.com is really, really doing well. I'm not trading him to Detroit unless Max Clark is coming back.
Okay.
But it's not, so that's the deal breaker, not, oh, I don't want to send him, because the property that you're working with here is he is an incredibly controllable reliever for 4 to 5 years at a discount rate. I actually think he'd have more value than we realize, but yeah, it's not a deal breaker. I don't hate it.
For point of reference, it's funny. I like 97.1. I like Valeni, so I listened to him yesterday on the ride home for a little bit, and he brought up what we were talking about yesterday, just the Clase and what that return would be, and he was laughing, his co-host, out the building when they offered up Max Clark in return. I was like, that's our guy. That's the one I want. He's like, no. Shut it down. That's not even a conversation point. So it's interesting how...
That's fine. You don't get Emmanuel Clase.
No, well, that's my thinking on it as well, too, right? Like, so, okay, you don't get Clase. You don't get Cade Smith, then. You don't get to have those conversations. If you want a seat at the table, you got to offer up some big boys. We don't want your leftovers. We want the players that matter.
And I think it's just so interesting to hear, like... we did this with Lindor back in the day. Remember when the Guardians had a little bit of success with Tito early... And there was talk about a big midseason trade. Like, I understand not wanting to trade a guy. That's fine. You're just not going to get back what you want.
Yeah, and especially in this market too, where I feel like you're gonna be able to, you're gonna ask for the sun, the moon, and the stars, and you're still probably gonna end up with the sun and the moon.
And you might, and by the way, you might get more than the sun, the moon, and the stars.
You're gonna end up with a good haul.
Go ahead.
All right. So the next one here, okay? And I chose 3 that really hadn't been with the team linked and the player linked yet up until this point. So, like, we talked to Emmanuel Clase and the Tigers. We did not discuss Cade Smith to the Tigers. I thought that was a little wrinkle there. With the Yankees, we brought Emmanuel Clase into the table. Or at least Jeff Passan brought Emmanuel Clase into the table. And so he had a couple different guys. He had Seth Lugo to the Yankees as well. But he highlighted Clase. And listen, the Yankees are going to need a third baseman. They're obviously going to need a closer as well. Would you feel comfortable helping out the Yankees in this capacity?
Yeah, mostly because I think Emmanuel's going to end up there anyways at some point. Because
he gives off Yankee vibes, does he not?
It's
I don't love how much Yankee vibes he gives off.
It's the Rivera thing. It's the way they pitch. And by the way, there's like 5 teams in baseball that once Emmanuel hits free agency, that actually will give him the oh my god kind of trade. They got Spencer Jones, who's an outfield prospect. They got Pereira, who's another one. So they do have what you need. I don't love it. because there's other farm systems I think are way better than the Yankees. Yeah, give this like a C on terms of the options. What about you?
I think the Yankees are going to make multiple moves. I think they're gonna do something to the bullpen. They're gonna do something to address third base. I think they're gonna be players in a multitude of areas, and I think I might even surprise baseball how involved the Yankees have to be at this deadline.
But if you don't give me Spencer Jones,
I haven't highlighted what player I want from the Yankees, but it definitely does feel like the type of move the Guardians would make, even though helping out that franchise doesn't seem appealing to me.
Bigger surplus tax, Yankees or the interdivision Tigers?
So I would rather deal with the Yankees than I would the Tigers, but I like the Tigers prospects so much better. So yeah. If you were to tell me at the end of the day it's Cade Smith to the Tigers, I'm signing up for that one out of all three of these that I'll present you. I'll present you one more.
I'd rather deal with the Tigers just because I think that's an elite farm system, and they've got, like, sometimes you look at it and go, all right, there's one definitive major leaguer, then there's two guys who could do something, and then a third guy that's like a scratch-off lottery ticket. Detroit has like 10 guys legit that are like, oh yeah, he's playing in the big leagues and he's going
to
be really good.
So the connection I want to make with all three of these trades, I'll get to the third one in a second, is there had to be some mental roadblock in the way, something that stood in the way. For Guardians fans, it's how much you hate the Yankees, and then obviously the interdivision thing with the Tigers. The next one's a little bit of a different wrinkle, and it's a team that needs bullpen help. They also need a big-time bat as well, but that's a different story for a different time. Well, actually, no, that's a story for right now. We're going to link up the big-time bat. I don't know. It was almost insulting. I'm bringing Stephen Kwan in the mix. He's not a big-time bat, but you guys know what I'm going for here. The Cincinnati Reds is what Jeff Passan is saying. He believes Stephen Kwan is the right answer for the Cincinnati Reds. The roadblock here being the idea, do you want to deal with helping out Tito?
Yeah, I don't think that would be a block for me. And I do think, like, the Cincinnati kind of has the inverse problem that you have. Like, I think they've got a bunch of emerging bats. They just need a guy like Kwan who can just be an on-base machine. The problem is I don't know you link up well with them. They do have bats, but, like, they've got corner infield bats. You don't really need them.
It also isn't the Reds from 10 years ago. They have a smart front office now. So yeah. You're not going to be able to fleece them the way that you once thought that you could. Kwan in a Reds uniform, for some reason, does make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're trying to pitch your guys, like Class A in a Yankees uniform adds up. It makes sense to me as well. But like Kwan in a Reds uniform and back in the one hole for Tito, I could see Terry Francona saying, this is my guy, go get him.
Can I tell you something, though?
It would rub me the wrong way, though.
The other thing I like about going to Cincinnati is I know he's going to leave. Whereas, like, if you trade Class A to the Yankees, he might never leave. When we traded Lindor to the Mets, the only problem that I had with it is,
when he goes in the Hall of Fame, he's going in as a Met?
Well, and he's going to sign a 13-year contract. Whereas, like, if you trade Kwan to the Giants, his hometown team, they have a lot that can help you. And a lot can help you right now and in the future. And pieces that make sense for you. But he's going to sign a 5-year, $125 million deal. And he's going to have seven and a half years guaranteed to be an all-star player every year. I don't know why that makes such a difference for me, but it absolutely does.
It would bother me. Kwan in a Reds uniform just bothers me. It's going to sound petty. I don't like helping out Tito at this point either.
That's interesting because, you know, I've been the guy that's a little, not anti-Tito, but not thrilled that Tito went to Cincy. What is it about helping Tito now that is...
I kind of want him to form his own thing. It's like, oh yeah, obviously you love Kwan, but you love Kwan because of the association you had here with him. Don't love it. And I don't love the push that he'd make. Maybe that push, though, might help out the Guardians because they'd overpay because Tito would be stressing how important someone like Kwan would be for that lineup.
Should the Browns re-sign David Njoku, Miles Simmons, Pro Football Talk, NBC Sports, and Cleveland's Own joins us in 5 minutes to answer that question on 92.3 The Fan.
Let's go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. A man who doesn't get giddy about silly things like a 3-game winning streak after a 10-game losing streak. One of the best baseball writers in the business. He's from The Athletic. He's Mr. Keith Law. Keith, thanks for being back with us despite our giddiness.
Thank you.
Hey, how you doing?
We're all right. We just have a team here that can't hit and isn't very entertaining. But by golly, we're looking at standings nonetheless. So hang in there with us, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's all you have to say about that one. The draft is coming up, and you got the first round coming up. And This organization has always looked at pitching. College pitchers have been a big thing for the Guardians. High school pitching has been a reasonably big thing. What hasn't been a big thing, at least in recent drafts, power hitting college players. Is that an area that is something this team should be looking at? Do you like that area of this draft? What are you thinking?
Well, it depends. See, I'm very much a best player available guy when it comes to the draft, particularly in baseball. You don't draft for need because most of these guys are going to take anywhere from 1 to 5 years to get there. And if you end up in the terrible situation where you have too many talented shortstops, you can trade those guys. So in the situation with the Guardians, they have not developed power bats, obviously. They're really good at developing pitching. That could be an argument to say the best player available for the Guardians is often going to be maybe a slightly undervalued pitcher, undervalued by the rest of the industry, because they know they can take guys like that and get them better. Tanner Bibby being, a particularly good example, but far from the only one. You know, the flip side of that is, well, at some point you have to go get power bats, and it's not like they've been trading for those guys either. So somewhere in there, I think they do need to mix in a different type of hitter, a different type of player, but a particularly different type of hitter than how they've typically drafted. Even if they don't feel like that's necessarily a core competence on the development side, at some point you're going to have to find some guys who can put the ball in the seats, and that is just kind of an organizational weakness and has been one for a couple of years now.
That said, the Guardians have a pretty good closer in Emmanuel Clase, and you wonder, for a team that might be struggling to figure out what its identity is around the trade deadline, what do you think his I think his value would be outstanding for them, especially for a team that is having trouble developing hitters. Anyone got any extra hitters laying around for a really, really good closer? Should he be on the trade block?
Yeah, well, I generally say yes on if you don't think you're going to the playoffs and you have a good closer, even a good reliever, those should be the first guys you trade. Because, unfortunately, because of a lot of things, how hard they throw, how we treat them, they don't last. Relievers tend to have a peak of about 2 or 3 years before things start to either go south or they just get hurt, which is unfortunate. I don't like that we live in a world where we treat these guys as disposable, but they are. And, I think in terms of the front office, that is your responsibility to treat them that way. And that means, Cleveland says, we're not going to the playoffs this year, or we're a long shot to go to the playoffs this year, then, you should trade Clase, or at least explore his trade value. That's probably a better way to say it. Unfortunately, some of the teams that might have been the best fits, like Baltimore, for example, are not shopping for a closer right now. Baltimore is a team that's weak pitching staff, absolute surplus at bats. They would otherwise line up pretty well with Cleveland, but Baltimore is already selling. We actually saw them make a minor trade this morning towards selling. So I don't know that there's necessarily an ideal fit for Clase, but they should put him out there and see what they get.
Keith, what would you want for him if you were the Guardians? He's under team control for 3 more years. He's under contract, real reasonable. He's arguably still the best closer in the game. And so he could be the back end of your bullpen for the next 3 years. But this organization produces, good pitching. You would think you could develop another closer, and you might already be here if it's Cade Smith or maybe even Hunter Gaddis. What would make you think, this would be a move to make?
And it could be somebody we're not even thinking, right? Often closers, a lot of them are failed starters. And they move to the bullpen, and their stuff picks up substantially. It helps address a mechanical issue. So I'm reasonably confident that Cleveland can create another closer. It may not be as good as Clase was last year, but could be good enough to be the closer even on a contending team. With Clase, with any reliever, I think the value is much more what can you do immediately and what's it going to cost in the very near term. So a reliever having 3 years of team control, nice, not as important as a starting pitcher or position player. Much more interested in how good can he be right now, how good has he been so far this year, and what does he cost? The fact that he doesn't cost a whole lot yet, just in pure dollars, means just about any contender could be interested, even teams that are low payroll clubs, the Rays, the Brewers, they should at least be interested. I feel like the Brewers in particular would probably be a pretty good fit. They do have some surplus in the farm system. Whether they'd be willing to trade from that is that's sort of another question. But I think that's just one, just top of my head, that could potentially line up. In terms of what the Guardians should be looking for, you want to maximize your return. yeah, they probably should prioritize bats a little bit just because pitching is a little less valuable to the Guardians. But if the best offer brings back more pitching and less hitting, I wouldn't say no to that just because I think we've got more of an organizational need. I also very much subscribe to the belief you can never have enough pitching, particularly because, like I said, they always get hurt.
Keith, could you get real close to major league ready bats or even young major league bats, two of them for Class A? Or would a team, and would the Guardians' best haul be, you know, somebody who's a really highly thought of Class A prospect, something like that?
Well, closers, relievers don't usually bring back that kind of multi-part, you know, multiple good prospects return. I would say, if you're thinking you're trying to get one prospect who's good and also close to the majors or even like a 0-3 guy in the majors right now, that's probably going to be the bulk of the return just because, and it has nothing against Class A at all. It's just that the market doesn't seem to value relievers the way that it used to, even 5-10 years ago, where I think you would flip a closer at the deadline and you would expect a multi-part return like that. So if I were them, and I would also want to prioritize somebody who's closer to the majors because I think Cleveland should be thinking about returning to contention next year, even if they've decided we're not contending right now. This team is close enough. I mean, it'd be nice if they'd spend a little money this offseason, but let's just say they're just going to keep, the ownership is going to keep doing what they do. This team is still good enough to contend in that division next year. So I could absolutely see them saying, we'd rather get someone who's a little bit closer, even if it means we're passing on a little bit more upside from a teenager in Abel. You know, the Brewers, I just happen to be thinking of the Brewers too, because they went and scouted their low A club a week and a half ago. And it's all teenagers, and they're really good. Several of them, like Jesus Mates, could be in the Futures game on Saturday. He's a superstar. You're not getting him. But there were other players on that roster who would potentially be available in the right trade and who would give a lot of long-term upside, but you're not going to see them in the majors for 3 years. And if you're trying to contend, like I am contending, the Guardians should be contending. Maybe those guys aren't the best fit. You'd rather get someone who could contribute in the next 15 months.
All right, Keith, I got a fun one for you. Major League Baseball is going to use the automatic break system. I'm at the ABS. I'm at the Automated Ball Strike Challenge system.
Yuck, during
the All-Star break in Atlanta. Your thoughts on that? I think this is going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Although, I don't know if you know this or not, but I'm wondering, do the umpires they normally use in the All-Star game, are they All-Stars too? Like, do they put together an all-star group of umpires? And if that's the case, then they may not have to use it very often.
Oh, I don't think. Well, I mean, I believe you have to get selected to work the all-star game.
Okay.
It doesn't mean they're the best.
Right.
Like, they're not, right? I don't think that's part of the equation. I think seniority has a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the challenge system.
Okay.
I want more accuracy in the calls, period. I've been to a lot of games. They use the ABS because I mean, it was just a AAA game last Wednesday. And I've been to Fall League games where they use it in the Salt River Ballpark out in Arizona. And I think it's, first of all, I think it's great because it's just more accuracy. And the way that they do it, where they display it on the Jumbotron, kind of makes it a little bit of an event. It doesn't take very long. And fans seem to really enjoy it. And I'm very much in favor of that because as much as I like the fact that we have replay to get calls, you know, safe out calls frequently to get those correct, it takes forever. Nobody enjoys that part of the process. It's just what we do because there's human error baked into the game and we want to get those calls right. But the ABS is fast, it's entertaining, and if it gets five calls reversed over the course of a game, which is probably about the most you would expect, that's a pretty big improvement, I would say. So I think it just makes the game better all around.
Keith Law joining us from The Athletic. He's going to have great coverage of the Futures game on Saturday coming up on The Athletic. A couple of Guardians players are there. Parker Messick, left-handed pitcher who seems like he's coming on, might be one of the next guys in the pipeline. And C.J. Cephas, who he hit in Akron. He's hitting in Columbus, although not as of late. A little slump right now. This team offensively challenged. You have Cephas in Columbus. We have Chase DeLauder in Columbus. Brito probably would have been up here if he hadn't yanked that hamstring. Why is an organization like this, ours in particular, Keith, so patient? What are they waiting for with DeLauder and Cephas? Are they seeing things they don't like? Or what's the reason that those guys are sitting down there when guys up here just aren't getting the job done?
In DeLauder's case, I assume it's just because he's constantly hurt. I mean, he has had so little playing time since they drafted him. It was 4 years ago. And he's been hurt for a significant portion of every year. It's been multiple injuries. He missed time earlier this year. So I would imagine they want him to get a little bit more experience in AAA before calling him up to the majors. And honestly, just because he hasn't, I mean, it wouldn't even matter what level. He just hasn't played enough this year. In Kaysbis's case, and this argument may also apply to DeLauder as well, I really believe in the value of having a guy go around the league a little bit, let another team, at least one other team, see you twice so that they adjust to you and then you have to adjust back. And maybe what's going on with Kaysbis. I've seen Kaysbis many times, not in AAA, but in AA, in spring training. So I'm in spring training and loved him there too. It's the best I ever saw him as. But in Kaysbis's case, I have some questions. I have some questions about what's the power ultimately going to be. I have some questions about left on left. Let him go around AAA a little bit more so that, you know, you play one team a week. So you wait until maybe you face a team for the second time, see if they change their plan so that you have to make some kind of adjustment. Because the moment you get to the majors, all of that happens on speed, basically. Like guys are, there's a book on you immediately. The data is incredibly complete. Teams have armies of people working on that, how to get you out as a hitter. And you're going to have to make those adjustments very quickly. So I think there's some value in letting a guy stay in AAA a little bit longer to do that. Now, if you and I are having this conversation in late August, I might have some more questions.
You expect both of those guys to be up here, Keith, at some point this year, or maybe one and not the other?
I would expect both those guys to come up, and Brito is healthy. I mean, this team, we're way past the point of pushing off free agency. We're past any consideration of Super 2 arbitration status, if that even stays in the next CBA. So there's no service time-related reason to keep these guys in the minors. It should all be about what is best for their development. And I think Kaysbis should be up because I think that once he's got a little more time in AAA, like I said, he'll be ready. With DeLauder, it's literally, can he just stay healthy? I think he would have been up a year ago if he'd been healthy. There's just been so many injuries. And I think we've talked before. I do not like his swing. I think he's going to have real trouble hitting good major league pitching. But we're not going to know until he gets there. He's going to have to get tested at the big league level. And if I'm Cleveland, I'm saying we want to know if any of these three guys are part of our lineup in 2026. And the only way to get any kind of read on that at this point is to call them up and give them 150 or so at-bats for the rest of the season. So I hope all three of those guys are in their lineup before we get to September.
Let's look a little further down the road. Travis Bezzana is back. He's played three games in the Arizona League, getting back after his oblique injury. He might have been on a fast track to get here. What did you think about him going number one last year and now his development? We've seen a couple of power hitters already reach the major leagues out of that draft. And, we don't have power hitters here in Cleveland. So we're thinking, wait a minute, did they miss? Is Bezzana still a great prospect? Where does it stand in your mind, Keith?
Well, so at the time of the draft, I think I had him second. I had Charlie Condon, who the Rockies took third. He was one on my board. Bezzana was second. Now, having, he's had some time in pro ball. I got to see him a couple games in spring training, talked to a couple guys who saw him before he got hurt this year. I do think the industry overall perception of him has cooled a little bit. There are a lot of concerns that his swing is so steep that it's going to be hard for him to keep up the very high contact rates he had in college. There are also some concerns about whether he's going to stay at second base or have to move to left field. In his defense, I'll say most amateurs don't get a lot of defensive instruction. Cleveland generally has a pretty good track record with developing good defensive players. I'd like to see him get more time in their system to work on his defense before I just consign him to an outfield corner. He's got a hit. I really want to see him hit for average. I'm not as concerned about him getting to 20-ish homer power. I think that'll be there if there's enough contact. But I saw the concerns. I have the same concerns with the shape of the swing. I know other people, particularly analysts, have voiced the same thing. Dustin Pedroia had a really ugly swing that was very steep, and he had a lot of mechanical things I didn't like. And that guy had a pretty good career. So I don't want to just assume Bazzano can't do it. He's got to play. And I would probably slow to your answer about him getting there quickly. I wouldn't rush him at this point. If he has to spend the rest of the year in double A because he missed, what was it, something like 8 weeks, fine. That'll still set him up to potentially debut in the majors at some point next year, as long as he performs.
Keith, last question for me. I'm just curious, how high are you on the Tigers for the long haul on this season? I mean, they've been playing great since the middle of last season, and unfortunately, we sit here in Cleveland and we're watching how good they're playing, but are they, how high are you on them to take in the American League?
I think they're legit. I think that lineup is incredible. I mean, it's really deep. They have an average to above average hitter at every single spot now that Trey Sweeney is in the minors and Parker Meadows is back. I think the pitching is more than just the Tariq Skubal show. I think they need to supplement it. If I were in your front office, it's all right. What back end starting pitching depth can we acquire at the trade deadline? But I'm also heading up to see their double A club in Erie, which has two of the top 10 prospects in baseball, Max Clark, Kevin McGonigal. They'll both be in the futures game. Sol Josue Briceño, who's also on this Erie club, is a long way thing. Their farm system's really good. They've done a hell of a job the last 2-3 years, and it's going to make them better at the big league level and probably able to get kind of anything they want at the trade deadline or maybe this offseason. They've got a lot to work with. So, yeah, I'm not trying to be a pessimist here on Cleveland radio, but you should be concerned. They got real good real fast, and I think it's going to sustain.
Keith, always great to have you with us. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Your coverage of the Futures game will be all over The Athletic, and I look forward to reading it.
Thanks,
sir.
Thanks, Keith.
My pleasure.
I actually understand the logic here, which is you're Nolan Jones. You haven't earned the right to not be pinch hit in that situation with how you played this year. Same with just about anybody in that lineup, not named Kwan or Ramirez. The problem is you pinch hit them for what I would say is AAA players, not even 4A players, and certainly not big league players in Will Wilson and Jonathan Rodriguez.
Yeah, so the real problem is exactly that, but I'll take it a step further. It's the idea that when you pinch hit for Will Wilson himself, and we can go deeper than batting average if you want to, but we'll just keep it there. He's hitting .172 on the season. Yeah. It doesn't matter if he's facing a lefty, a righty, a robot, or anyone in between, he's not going to have success. So Nolan Jones, although yes, in most situations, I understand what he's saying. When you want a platoon to give them the best chance possible, that's if you were having a hitter that was of equal talent of Nolan Jones. And that's not even, Nolan Jones isn't even that great. I'm just saying you got to at least be able to sniff something competent before you can start to have that discussion in a lefty-righty split matchup percentage. Jonathan Rodriguez hitting .143, he's not good against anybody.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter, lefty-righty or anything in between.
Yeah, and I think this is the paralysis by overanalysis that I think the Guardians sometimes, when they're in there, even Vogt yesterday said it. See, I told you guys, this is what we were talking about. It's like, dude, it's been two games, and you almost gave that game away. There's no I get to talk smack when you're still 6 or 7 games below .500. And 3 weeks ago, you were 3 or 4 games above .500.
Right. And if that pop-up by Angel happened anywhere else, it wouldn't have been a home run.
And I just think it's time to okay, guys, the honeymoon's over with Stephen Vogt. I respect Stephen for what he's done. I appreciate it. I'm not going to discredit what he did last year. But that's the easy way. When everything's firing early and you've got 90 games of pure bliss to start your career, that's the easy way to start your career as a manager. This, you start out roughly around .500 or just above it, and then you hit the skids and you got to pull the nose up on the thing. This is the toughest. This is the antithetical option to that. And last night, and it's not just last night, because Steven has gotten, in some manner of speaking, a pass for the last 10 games or the 10-game losing streak. He shouldn't. Because ideas like this were things that were sinking them even further during that 10-game stretch. I'm not selling Stephen Vogt stock, but that was last night was crap. And here's the thing. There's one school of logic, which is you're Nolan Jones. Yeah, had 2 hits, but you can be pinch hit for. And then there's the more important logic, which you espoused, which is under no circumstance should you ever pinch hit Nolan Jones for Will Wilson or Jonathan Rodriguez on your damn life.
Yeah, like the splits are never going to make sense in your favor in that way. And I tend to think a lot of this stuff more comes from the front office than it does vote. Because we've seen them play with the platooning for years. And I would imagine part of the reason why they liked vote as a hire to begin with is because he was going to get on board with that. Like the idea that they like to platoon. And Antonetti and Chernoff, they have lineups they like to set. And then they'll tell you ahead of the game, this is what we like to do and this is how we want to see it played out.
I can't give him the Peterlin pass. I can't. At some point, you got to be your own man. I agree with you, by the way, on the overarching point that I think Vogt is more flexible than Tito, and I think that's something they were looking for because I think at some point there became tension, and not bad, not like we don't like each other, tension between the front office and Tito.
Look and see how baseball is going these days, though. And now more than ever, and really in the last couple of years, it's really been magnified. The front offices have such a say in the day-to-day and the inning-to-inning that it just never really existed 10, 20, 15 years ago.
You were spot on. You were spot on. But in that moment, like Stephen Vogt, every manager in baseball does have the ability to say, okay, I know what we normally do here. This isn't a normal situation, and pivot out. And if he doesn't, then Steven is too much of a shill for the front office.
Well, and that's where a feel has to come in some parts of this game, right? And that's where even like Nolan Jones, there's no justifying Will Wilson in that spot. But when Nolan Jones has two hits already in the game, I don't know about you, Nick. I do believe in the idea that sometimes just players have good days and bad days, and they're seeing the ball really well. Like, I thought it was funny that that Rocchio two nights ago after he had the game-winning hit was like, those first two pitches I did not see well at all. It's like, I wouldn't tell people that, by the way.
No, I would. I love it. We need more honesty like that in baseball.
If I'm Rocchio, I'd be like, no, I saw every pitch great, and then I hit the one that was the best for me. He's like, I didn't see those pitches good at all. Okay, then. That was like a guessing game at the plate. It's like a carnival game for Rocchio all of a sudden. But like, I do think in baseball, I think there's definitely better days than worse, and I think there's better days for when you see the ball and when you don't see the ball. And like Nolan Jones in that spot, if it's a righty, if it's a lefty, I got faith that Nolan Jones is going to be able to come through.
And listen, I don't want to put too much on this because this is like the ancillary point I'd like to make. The team clearly was responding to Nolan. I can't remember if it was his first hit or second hit when he was at second base and he did the little shimmy.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
That
was a weird celebration, but I liked them doing it.
It was, but you could tell the clubhouse was eating it up.
He did like a sexual gesture at the end there.
I gotta say,
did you see that?
You boys got it. Well done, Nolan Jones.
He did
Jones.
Have some aura.
He did, but even that, like that, kind of goes along with your points. Not only is he seeing it better, he's the whole point of where this offense has been is they do not have an environment conducive to guys succeeding. Meaning there's so much youth and all the guys are struggling with the same thing that you just, I mean, Hosey and Kwan can only carry you so much.
Yeah.
Vibes were all the way down. Aura points were all the way down. And so when you then go, hey, you've come up big for us today. This is the best game you've had in weeks, even though he had a hit the night before. Thank you. We're going to sit your ass for Will Wilson. I mean,
Schneeman had the two RBIs, and then he gets sat for Jonathan Rodriguez, who continues to not hustle.
This is supposed to be Stephen Vogt's forte. You're a former player. You know how those little things do matter when you're not winning. And by the way, that's exactly why last night was a huge win, whether they lose today or not. Because the way you won, you made a lot of mistakes, and you got bailed out by Angel Martinez. That win can matter something. The last two wins can mean something to you because you're getting yourself out of your funk, even though it takes more than two games to do that. But Stephen Vogt, multiple times in the last 3 weeks, has cost them in situations like that. And unfortunately, last night was the first time it didn't cost him a damn game, or was the final straw for that. But you have to know when to get out of your own way or get out of the front office's way. And again, no one's calling for him to be fired. But Stephen Vogt has to learn in that moment, don't hurt.
I just feel like too many times, if I was playing for them, I'd be walking on eggshells.
Yes, I think they are. I think you see it.
Well, think about it. Like, I want to take another example further, right? Like, just the whole situation that's weird that's going on with Austin Hedges and Class A and Bo Naylor. So Bo Naylor makes the mistake in the Sunday game and the pass ball and everything that happened there. I got it, right? It cost you a game. But now all of a sudden, Austin Hedges is just in on any time Class A pitches late in these games now. Yeah. Like that was it? Now, so Bo Naylor just cannot catch for Class A? Class A doesn't trust him anymore? Or is that Stephen Vogt saying, I don't trust him anymore? Like, it's just It's weird. It's odd I get it. It was not great by Bo Naylor. No one's trying to make an excuse for Bo, but Bo's still a really good defensive catcher. And then to say you made one mistake in a game that cost us our 10th loss in a row, so now we just don't trust you anymore?
All right, I'll go full into the conspiracy theory. I think it's 100% Emmanuel Clase.
It might be. But
I don't think it's Vogt. Vogt is a former catcher, and Vogt is defended.
But see what that does, though. Like for Bo Naylor in that moment to be like, so I make one mistake, and Clase just doesn't trust me at all.
I don't
even know that I would bend to that one if I was them. I'd be like, no. Like if we make the calls in that decision, this isn't Greg Maddux in the '90s.
Clase's right on this.
I don't know. Because it's not like Bo's a bad catcher. Bo, in every advanced catching metric that you have from a defensive standpoint, is really solid.
Yeah, he is. But the problem is when the mistakes happen. Nobody gives a rip if that happens in the third inning. They've been happening late in games, and they've been careless mistakes. They haven't been like, oh, that's a tough pitch. Is Stephen Vogt defending the one, I think it was a sinker in the dirt that went between his legs during the Tigers game? Oh, it's the toughest pitch to block. No, it's not. And you know that's a lie as a catcher. You damn well know that's not the toughest pitch. So I think it's 100% Class A, and I think Class A is 100% right.
It's got to be absolutely demoralizing to be a catcher in that spot. One mistake, and then Class A gets to switch you out for Hedges.
Yeah, remember.
I don't know that I like that.
Learn your damn lesson.
Again, this isn't Greg Maddux in the '90s, where all these guys get to have their own personal catchers and they get to have their own everything.
He's the most elite closer in baseball. If anyone has that ability to make
that
call.
And he's probably going
to
be traded in 2 weeks.
I don't know. And as long as he's here, if the best pitcher on your staff, and he's better than any of the starters are at what he does, if the best pitcher says, I don't trust this guy to block a simple ass ball in the dirt. I'm not trying to hammer Bo, but he's too much of a veteran now. He's not the rookie anymore. He's the third or fourth most experienced player in the lineup.
But Vogt on Monday had the quote out, and it was everywhere. The idea that this was not a transitional thing. This was not going to be something they consistently do. And then they went again to it last night. So again, that's where it gets a little confusing. It's like, did they make the switch? Did they not make the switch? Is this something Clase wants, or is this something they're just trying out for a couple games? And then if Clase gets comfortable with it, it becomes the status quo.
Oh, I think this is. Well, listen, Emmanuel can always go back on it. Right? I mean, you can regain your trust in Bo Naylor if you're Emmanuel. But yeah, absolutely. It should be the status quo. You cannot lose games because your catcher can't block a damn ball in the dirt. Like, if you're going to hit 170, then you better be able to block that ball. Because here's the thing, it's happened too many times. And I feel for Emmanuel, who, by the way, is not the same guy he was last year. So he's trying to get himself back to his 2024 form, or I think it was 2022 when he was also this dominant. And you cannot have the game impacted like that, because you can go from Manuel Clase to Joe Borowski in three pitches if your catcher isn't doing the one thing he's supposed to do. So listen.
I don't know.
Stephen Vogt doesn't get a pass for that crap last night, and Bo Naylor doesn't either. Bo should not be hitting 175.
No, Bo's got to be better. There's no question. But defensively, he really is not the issue that I think you think he is. He had the one big mistake, and now they hit the eject button.
It's been multiple times, though, over the last 3 weeks late in the game. When it happens,
I'm not thinking of another example. Do you have another example on the top of your head?
There was literally an identical passed ball within the last 3 weeks. I can't remember which game it was, because I was on Michigan Standard Time, but there's been two passed balls late in games that have been gimmies. I don't want to say gimmies because that's not fair. Catching is very, very hard.
Even the Tigers game, I wouldn't call that one a gimme, but that is what it is.
It's not the toughest play you're going to make as a catcher. It's a play that you should routinely make.
But to sacrifice it for Austin Hedges, of all people, who's not going to get a hit if he does end up coming up. And on top of it, I think the message it sends to Bo Naylor is the sense of, we are giving up on you in many ways.
I think
it's a bad message.
I think the message is, you're a damn professional. You're one of the leaders of this team. And by the way, there was a third play, the throw home where Bo was looking to Idaho.
Well, that's the one I isolated out on that one. Now that one, if you want to pull him in that game in that moment, I would totally do that. But that was while the play was going on, that had nothing to do with him with Class A and being able to catch a ball or
that's,
not.
That's three heads up strikes in 3 weeks.
He's got one pass ball on the year so far.
Yeah, that just because they didn't mark it a pass ball wasn't. It might have been marked a wild pitch. I really cannot remember.
He's got a .991 fielding percentage as a catcher.
No, he's good.
Got
overall.
One pass ball in the season.
But when you make your mistakes matter, and if Bo can't handle that,
I just thought it was too reactionary off of one play.
Oh, I'm telling you right now, and this is the deference I will give to the Guardians, even as I excoriate Stephen Vogt right now. The thing that I'll give them is they are painfully, 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 precious and patient with their players. So for this to be happening, it's more than just a one-time thing. And again, there's just too many moments where the catcher, who if you have a lot of young guys in the field, that guy has to be the guy talking to everybody. That guy's the leader on the field. And when you make simple, stupid mistakes, Bo's made one too many. And he has not accomplished enough to not get written out of games at the end of games. And by the way, you and I are simpatico. I don't ever want to see Austin Hedges with a game on the line and the bat in his hand. To me, it is the opposite of Viagra. All right, it is the worst. It's Michael Martinez 2.0.
If this is the beginning of Bo, then it's the beginning of Bo, but that's kind of what it's signaling.
But the point is, no, I don't think so.
The beginning of the end of Bo is what I'm saying. You can't
come back from this. But Bo, you're a professional. You got to make those plays because your team needs you to, and when they happen matters. And when you're down in a game and you have a no heads up play, Bo, these things matter. And I think the Guardians have been patient with Bo on a lot of fronts. So I'm not trying to kill him because I still believe Bo can be really good. But like, meaning on the offensive side of the ball too.
But you're punishing him in the name of Austin Hedges. You're making your team worse in the moment in a lesson. Austin Hedges is a fine catcher. From a defensive standpoint, I'm not going to drag him from that perspective. But like, it's not as if Bo Naylor is awful defensively. By many metrics that I looked at, he's very good defensively.
216-474-0092. Is there any point where... you know what? We'll ask this. Is the honeymoon over with Steven Vogt? Because that's what I felt last night watching it. It was a, you're too smart. You know baseball too much. You know how being a baseball player works too much to get in your own damn way. And the thing that is owed to LeBron James in 5 minutes on 92.3, The Fan.
Certainly some of them are baseball excuses. The fact that these teams have all lost, how much money with their local TV deal. I knew that was going to be a doomsday scenario the minute that I knew this was going to accelerate the bad times for the Guardians. I knew it. I had warned everybody 4 years ago, hey, have you guys been paying attention to the local TV stuff? But what fun is that to talk about that every day? Well, then they did it. They got the rug pulled out from underneath them. There were some attempts behind the scenes to get some other teams involved to figure out a local TV revenue stream. But the Guardians were out on their lonesome and they lost $40 to $50 million. And guess what? Next year, again, there is nobody to save the day there. They're just going to be down that money. Well, you already had one of the lowest revenue streams in baseball anyway and one of the lowest payrolls. So, yeah, if you're asking me, am I making excuses for the Dolans? I've wanted the Dolans to sell the team for a decade. I just have always been be careful who buys the team because they might not keep the organization intact. And then what do you have? The only thing you've had all these years is one of the best organizations in baseball. And now people are acting like the organization's terrible. I've heard this over the last...
I've not called the front office.
But I have heard from a lot of people over the last few days, they don't develop. Kirchin's saying they develop players. They don't develop players. They don't draft players well. They don't spend money. Okay, so why do they have so many wins? What did they do to win the games? What other ways are there to win baseball games? Was it Tito? Well, man, you guys put Tito through the ringer in recent years. Said the game passed him by and he had an antiquated style. Okay, then why did they win? What were they doing to win games all these years?
Well,
if it's not develop players, trade for players, what other ways are there? Are they getting players from another dimension somehow?
I do believe.
What are they doing?
I do believe that if they were given more to spend, they would be able to do a better job. Because they don't get a lot to spend. Mm-hmm. We have to put everything under a microscope. It isn't very good where this year, you've had Tyler Freeman do a good job. Junior Caminero is going to be in the All-Star game now instead of Alex Bregman? Because Alex Bregman got hurt. That's a kick in the ass for the front office there. But my problem has been, and it has to be, with the ownership. It's directly on what you get to spend on it. I think the front office has done a fine enough job. And I can't argue over the last 10 years. You're talking about a bunch of wins, fine. But in the grand scheme of things, why people are frustrated over what Tim Kirchin said to us on our show yesterday, which you can go back in here on 92.3thefan.com and the free Odyssey app, why they are mad is that it's just a giant participation trophy. You win a lot of games. Guess what? That's just a bunch of opening day pitches. ceremonial first pitches and free drinks at bars in Cleveland because we're pretty thankful. But people want more. And you could blame that on rings culture, but that ain't my fault.
Right,
that's the times we're living in.
Right, you're 100% true.
Okay, am I wrong? Why have you been yelling at me over the last 20 minutes?
Fans don't get to pick the owners, right? We are subjected to whoever buys the team. That's it. There really aren't. Are there any instances where fans have forced out an owner? How many times has that happened in the history of sports where fans have been so animated? Maybe they boycotted, and we don't want to see a boycott.
Ted Stepien was pretty close. So
it's hard to do, right? It's hard. Like, media doesn't really, as much as people give the media credit for running guys out of town, does the media ever really run a guy out of town?
No.
So that's pie in the sky. That's a pipe dream. So we don't get to pick our owner. So our owner is going to spend what the owner is going to spend. Then I'm sitting here, and I have to deal with the consequences of that. So if I know that we're going to have among the lowest 7-8 payrolls in baseball every single year, I mean, what do you do with the expectations for teams like that?
If you can't have any expectations.
Like, we should be the Pirates.
If you can't
We should have been it, over the last well, 10 years, we no, should have been the Pirates, right?
Paul Dolan has done more for the baseball team than what the Pirates. See, that the Pirates are the example I use, which are 2 hours down the road. Their fans don't care. That's just a state park to look at the river over there. That's all that is. Oh, and once every 2 weeks because you have homestands, you have Paul Skeens pitching for you. Maybe twice.
And they have to be told every day that he's gone.
That is just terrible over there. Paul Dolan's done enough, but he's done enough to get people mad at him because they know you can do a little bit more. And because the front office is that good, they believe a little bit more can mean a big difference to you. Because no, not the Yankees and Dodgers and Mets win the World Series every year, for crying out loud. But that's part of the reason that people get frustrated, where the Royals won the World Series a decade ago. The Braves have won the World Series. I mean, these are teams that the Detroit looks like they could very well be in the ALCS or World Series this year. If Detroit wins the World Series this year, heaven help Paul Dolan on that with this fan base. Because when you come off an ALCS, it's expected that you do more. And I was with you up until I talked to Zach Mizel. I'm sorry. I know you weren't here for Zach Mizel. You were out dealing with the kiddos. But when we had Zach on, and he had to set me straight on that, and he had to basically embarrass me on the air that, no, you've been blaming a boogeyman that ain't true about what they've been able to spend and what they've not been able to spend and what they've been able to actually invest in this team coming off an ALCS. I had to be called out on the carpet for that and say, that's an excuse, and I can't do that anymore. And if I have no excuses anymore to make, then I only have allegations that I can throw at him.
And the allegations that I can throw at him,
you did not do enough to make your fan base, to give your fan base a reason to believe that you're doing what's necessary to invest in the team to win a championship.
Yeah, I don't know how to answer that, because if you're just telling me they have all this money to spend that they're not spending, okay, we'll sell the team. But I've done that for 10 years. I don't know... I that would drive me crazy that I would just never watch the team ever again. And I don't want to do that. Or I'd never talk about the team ever again if I thought they were hoarding money that they could spend. And all of a sudden, every other Major League Baseball team is not running it like a business, but we're the one team that does. I think it's pretty clear that's not the case. I think there are a slew of teams and a slew of owners. And by the way, whoever ends up buying the Guardians, right? If it is supposed to be this plan David with Blitzer. David Blitzer, how is he going to run the team? Do we have him on record?
He'll run it like a business, and he will be yelled at too. It's not where I have.
Will the payroll?
The only
be,
thing that I think is going to really change.
Somebody tell me what the payroll will be when the Blitzers take over.
I have no idea. The only thing I think is really going to change is a work stoppage. And if they have a work stoppage, then maybe David Blitzer is able to be the white knight in all this that is able to take advantage as the new owner.
That would be awesome.
But and more than likely, we'll just end up yelling at that guy while slowly and surely the interest in the game overall, or at least at the major league level, continues to dwindle. Matt Nacar, you're first up on the fan.
Well, good morning, Ken and Anthony Dolan. How's it going?
What's up?
Hello, Matt.
So I was scrolling through the X waves and I saw like a big argument yesterday, and it seems like there's a big generational divide too with the fan base, because there's so many fans that are like, I'm 60 years old. I dealt with this team being like, the doldrums of the doldrums. You guys should be grateful for even being competitive. And And then you have me and probably a lot of us that, like, you know, grew up on the 90s Guardians or Indians. And it's like, well, no, we were successful. We made it to a certain point and we expect more, like, once you get to a certain point. And it's like, ownership just keeps telling us, well, you gotta be happy. And then when you have a guy like Tim Kirchin come on, say that you guys should basically be grateful for the Dolans, all it does is make you want to punch your windshield out. And it's like, it's basically like saying, oh, so if you're being served Salisbury steak for 50 years, you should be happy to get a cheap cut of steak at a restaurant that's slightly better. Like, it's ridiculous that, like, just, and I honestly do think that, like, Blitzer coming in will change it. And I think
so. What indication do you have that would be the case?
I mean, Limeck, it can't get worse, and I don't think Blitzer's involved in politics.
There are like seven teams spending less money on baseball than us. Are you positive?
I mean, here's the thing. Blitzer's not involved in politics. No one seems to press Paul Dolan on how much money he spent on politics over the last years that could have went towards baseball. He's got money for that.
I think he's I think the baseball team.
I don't think that they use the baseball team for funds for that. But I think that thinking of is, you know, and I kind of threw it out there yesterday, Matt. It's where, listen, if he's going to sell the team, like somebody messaged me the other day, he's like, well, there's like another two-year plan for David Blitzer to take over. And it's like, okay, well, that makes it even worse because you're thinking, well, why don't you go into hawk for your baseball team because you're going to make it up on the other end because the team's supposed to be worth $1 billion.
Yeah, because, I mean, that was the problem, too, like, in the Sherman years, because, you know, there was supposedly a plan for Sherman to take over, too, all that time. And then next thing you know, Sherman buys the Royals, and then they had to take out the share that he had that Dolan had to pay out, and then they had cut payroll there, too. So it's like
what, Matt, point, what, like, I get, what I get nervous about...
Matt, thank you for the call.
I've argued over the years, I've been on the radio saying I wish they'd sell the team to somebody with money. Well, Blitzer
has money.
Blitzer has money. The problem is, unlike the Dolans who bought it at relatively a pretty good price compared to what it's going to go for now, right?
Yes.
And when they had the BAM money, they spent it. When they sold Sports Time Ohio, they spent it. They put it right back into the team. This team, it's going to be bought for not some big bargain. And they're going to buy it as a distressed asset because the Guardians will be down $50 million a year in local TV money. So unlike when teams get bought and there's just all this new TV money, the Blitzers, if it's in, they're not going to get that benefit. So how do we know they're gonna spend it like it's a hobby and not operate it like it's a business? And then what I'm nervous about is when these teams get bought, they normally do clean house with the front office. So the one advantage you've had every year has been this front office. And when that's gone... And yeah, they're going to try to make a splash with big free agents. I'm just saying, buyer beware.
Justin Latta is going to answer all these things from the Locked On Guardians podcast at 8:22 this morning. It's time to play 2 Second Trivia, 216-474-0092.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it?
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.